This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, happy Thursday out there to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday, March 23. It is the day after the March FOMC. We've been covering that pretty extensively here, and obviously the Forex and the bond markets and the precious metals markets have all responded due to everything Powell said yesterday. But man, there's a lot going on, obviously, with the ongoing banking crisis. And I thought actually last week is when we set this up. It was about a week ago today. I emailed our old friend Denver Dave, Dave Kranzler of Investment Research Dynamics, and of course, the great newsletter Mining Stock Journal and Short Sellers Journal. And he's been a friend now for about a decade. And I thought, and I just knew that he was the right guy to talk to at this point in time. So, Dave, thank you for taking some time to join me.
No, thanks for having me on, Craig. It's good to be on again.
We'll get to Mining Stock Journal again, because I just gave your name to somebody earlier this week. Somebody had seen me on a YouTube video, and you know, where I was talking about you need objective, independent voices to help you through this. And the guy emailed me and said, look, I'm not a subscriber, but I don't even know, you know, who. And I sent him your name because
I appreciate that.
Well, you do great work. And if we're now entering a period again, and I think we are, of sustained higher prices, then there's going to be flows of funds into our sector. And if you need to know, you know, if you need to pick one good stock versus others, or you want to refer something that you're thinking about and see if Dave likes it, Mining Stock Journal at Investment Research Dynamics is where to start. InvestmentResearchDynamics.com. All right. So, Dave, I'm not sure where to start with you, but I'm going to start with this. You know, we've been off and on now for years discussing Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, the European banking sector, all that stuff. And obviously the news has now come out and Credit Suisse is going to be no more. I want to talk to you about those AT1 credit and that kind of stuff as well. But I think we should start with your old buddy, Deutsche Bank. I think the media and the markets would like you to believe Credit Suisse kind of a one-off. What do you think?
It's not a one-off. They're all interconnected via OTC derivatives. That's why, you know, that's why you had that joint statement issued by the major Western central banks. You remember that? I think it was last week.
Yep.
It was over the weekend, I think. I think it was on Saturday. Like, those guys had to interrupt their, you know, their tea times to have this meeting, and then announce to everyone that they were, you know, the central banks were going to collaborate to provide liquidity for all of the banks. So, Credit Suisse, obviously, its demise was well telegraphed, right? I mean, that saga has been going on, I think, for at least a year. I mean, I lose track of these things.
Right.
You know, and Deutsche Bank's been on official care and maintenance by the German government, the Bundesbank, the ECB, and the Fed since 2008. So, you know, the problem is they papered over the root of the problems that caused the original financial crisis. They tried to bamboozle us by telling us they passed regulations that made it next to impossible for it to happen again. Your grandmother, Janet Yellen, a couple years ago said there will never be another financial crisis.
Yep.
Well, here we are. And I think what's coming at us is way worse than 2008.
Obviously they're independent in some regards, but you know, could Deutsche Bank begin to slide, do you think, the way, you know, Credit Suisse has gone from 8 to 2 to 0 this year? Could like a mob of short sellers and, you know, people trying to get out of the stock, trying to get out of the bonds, all that kind of stuff, could Deutsche Bank or some other, maybe not even them, maybe some other bank in the EU be next?
That's a great question. I mean, the problem with Deutsche Bank, or the reason why that might not happen, is they've had 15 years to try and figure out where all the bodies are buried, and let all the skeletons out of the closet and paper them over. You know what I mean?
That's a lot of cliches and metaphors in one sentence, buddy.
I should have started it with "in a nutshell."
Right.
I don't know. I mean, Deutsche Bank's essentially a German public utility now, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, there's no telling what's going on really beneath the public accounting numbers and the veneer. And it gives me a headache to go through the GSIB financials, you know, the globally systemically important bank, to go through their financials and wade through the footnotes. I mean, it's hundreds of pages. So I haven't spent time looking at them lately, but I mean, they all basically are of the same composition. And the only difference is the degree of leverage and the unknowable degree of eventual counterparty risk on the OTC derivatives they've all continued to underwrite since 2008.
Yeah. 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 You probably saw that meme on Twitter of like Earth and then the sun. Or no, it was the moon, Earth, Jupiter, and the sun. You know, it was like, and the sun was the total derivative exposure versus, you know.
Well, I didn't see that, but I wish I had, because that's a perfect analogy.
Maybe I'll put that on this page. I'll track it down. All right. So that's, you know, contagion there. Contagion here, you know, that we've discovered a new type of bank run in the 21st century. You know, it used to be lines outside the door, people queuing for actual cash, and now it's just a couple of keystrokes. And banks can be drained of available reserves pretty quickly, especially when their actual reserves are underwater because they've been marking them to maturity rather than marking them to market.
Yeah.
Dave, I want to read you something and get your thoughts on this. Yesterday was the FOMC, and one of the things I do for my people here is I torture myself every time Powell speaks, and I listen to every word so that nobody else has to.
That's brave.
I know. Well, you get numb after a while, you know. all right. So this caught my ear at the this was right at the tail end, like in the last 5 minutes, and it was shorter. He spoke for 10 minutes instead of the usual five. And then the Q&A was only 30 minutes. A lot of times it's 45 minutes to an hour. So about in the last 5 minutes, there was this, and I just wonder just off the top of your head what you make of this. This lady named Nancy Marshall Genzer is with Marketplace, whatever that is, and says, Chair Powell, I'm reading from the transcript, just wondering how many financial institutions have been issued what the Fed calls matters requiring attention, which is MRA, or matters requiring immediate attention, citations. So these are citations from the Fed to banks. How many members have been issued this at this point? And Powell said, how many? I don't know. Okay. And I was listening to this at the time. He was like stalling and stumbling. This answer didn't take like 2 seconds. He said, how many? I don't know. Those are serious. This is his words. Those are serious regulatory, particularly immediate attention. That's, I guess there were six of them. So, and then Nancy, rather than let that just hang, then goes on and says, and getting to the seriousness of it, how are you going to ensure that banks comply with these citations, take them seriously, and how will you enforce them? And then, of course, he then passed the buck and said, that's a great question, and it's right to the heart of the review we'll be doing under Vice Chair Barr's leadership, blah, 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 blah. But to me, as I listened to it, when he said, and he paused, and he said, there were six of them. So, Dave, a lot of people figure First Republic Bank and PacWest, and we've already had this problem with Silicon Valley Bank. I mean, does this lead you to think that, I don't know, we're far from through this?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, and those critical immediate attention matters, or whatever they call them. I mean,
matters require immediate attention, MRIA.
That suggests, you know, something that might threaten the liquidity of the bank. I mean, the thing of it is that I never really spent any time looking at these regional bank financials and their balance sheets until Silicon Valley. And I did a very thorough dive into Silicon Valley's situation. And I wrote it up for my short seller's journal a couple of weeks ago. And I thought people would get pissed because I did that at the expense of presenting a few new ideas or whatever. But I got a very positive feedback on it. And I haven't looked at a lot of other regional bank financials, but the ones that I have pulled up, they're all away from the type of loans that they're doing. Like Silicon Valley Bank had away from its the long duration treasury and agency structured bond investments that they had, the available for sale and hold to maturity. Their loan portfolio, which was about a third of the size of their investment in these treasuries, et cetera, was a bunch of garbage. I mean, it was radioactive. When they're trying to sell Silicon Valley Bank, and if they get bids on those loans, people are going to have to pour through the loan documentation word by word. And I bet most of them aren't even worth 10 cents on the dollar. And they were carrying that package of loans on their books at like 70 billion.
That sounds so then I, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then I started looking at a couple of the others, like First Republic, and they're all the same. They all have a large amount of deposits, because that, you know, that's their business. That's how they finance their loans. But most of the deposit money is invested in these same types of treasury and agency structured bond products and commercial mortgage-backed securities, mm-hmm. commercial real estate loans. They all look the same, and they're all underwater. And, you know, so my guess is those critical notices that were issued were sent to banks that were deemed to be immediately at risk if all of a sudden there's a run on, a bank run on the deposits.
All right. So that I want to get to that, because that was the other thing I wanted to ask you about. But I want to get your opinion if I'm interpreting this correctly. You know, this new facility, it's a little bit like, to me, a little bit like TARP, in that Powell thinks they've solved the problem by allowing these banks, you know, to exchange for cash. You know, they might have 10-year treasuries that they bought at 1.5%. They're now trading at 90, you know, or whatever. And so they're able to park them at the Fed, and the Fed gives them back par, because the Fed's now just going to hold them until maturity. So Powell thinks, if I'm reading him right, that they've, you know, he solved this problem. So that's the first question. Is that a good layman's interpretation?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So then that's not the problem or the whole problem. And this is what I was going to ask you next. You started to bring it up. Commercial real estate. I know you've tracked in your short seller's journal all kinds of, I see, you know, we've talked about in the past, all the home, you know, home builders. I know you really understand the real estate marketplace. How big of a threat? It's not maybe as big as regular home mortgages 15 years ago, but how big of a threat to you are these commercial real estate loans and the commercial mortgage-backed securities that these banks hold?
I mean, in my opinion, they're radioactive.
Okay.
So, you know, commercial real estate is just getting annihilated. I mean, the best way to measure that is Vornado, right?
I want to remind everybody, remember, we've been talking about that here. We've looked at that chart a number of times in the last 2 weeks.
Remember,
I just want to remind people, that's that REIT that we could track back 30 years, came out at $20 a share or whatever in the early 90s, went to 100 a couple of times, and now it's what, 14?
It's below 14 now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gone from 46 at the end of March 2022 to now 13. And I mean, the other day I looked at the composition of what Vornado's invested in, and I mean, they're concentrated in New York and San Francisco, and if there was one other big city, I don't remember which one, but I mean, that's just a complete reflection of the degree to which big city commercial real estate is distressed. I mean, there's always been a huge oversupply of capacity in office buildings, and then what happened during the pandemic and the sudden movement to work from home, I mean, that pretty much to me put the final nail in the coffin on a lot of commercial real estate. And not, it's not just office buildings, right? It's also big shopping malls too, now
Strip
too,
malls.
right? Because you look at JCPenney's, I mean, gone. Bed Bath and Beyond, soon to be gone. Bed Bath and Beyond occupies a lot of real estate
Yeah.
in suburban shopping, shopping malls.
They're like
So
the key anchor tenant in a lot of strip malls and things like that.
even some big malls,
Yeah.
yeah. So yeah, I mean, and the thing is, I looked it up the other day. You interviewed John Titus, and that was, if you, people in your audience haven't listened to it, I mean, don't let the weekend go by without listening to it. It was a great interview, and obviously I have the utmost respect for John. I've known him for over 10 years, and he's an incredibly bright mind.
Yeah, he is.
But when you asked him about commercial real estate loans, he said, he hasn't really looked into that. So, he can be excused. He said it's not that big of a market. And I went and looked it up. I emailed him. I'm like, John, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association of America's latest publicly available quarterly report, I mean, this commercial real estate loan market is 4.6 trillion, of which these regional banks own about 75% of
Oh
that.
shit. Oh
Yeah.
God. Excuse. Sorry, everybody. Oh God.
So I mean, you ask, does this bank term funding program, which has been appropriately dubbed by the fucking pivot. Excuse my French
Oh,
there.
is that what BTFP?
Yeah, it's called the Bank Term
I
Funding
hadn't heard
Program. So
that. Oh my God,
yeah.
that's awesome. Oh, that's fantastic.
I mean, that facility hasn't solved shit.
Well, and what? Oh, so what'd you say? 4.3 trillion?
It was believe it was 4.6 trillion.
All right. And the banks own 75%. So now we're at like,
Regional banks and yep.
so that's 3.2 trillion. I'm just kind of roughly gauging it. I don't know, guessing. Let's call it 3 trillion to keep the math easy. Let's just say 10%, right?
Yeah.
10% is bad. Help me out, brother. How many billions of dollars is that? 300 billion?
I'm sorry, say that again. What were you looking
Let's say
at?
10% of all those commercial real estate is basically, all those things are, is it's a loss. There's a markdown of
No, it's more,
10%.
Craig, it's more than 10%.
Okay. But
I
just
bet
even
you
on
it's
a
more like 30%. I mean, and again, this is more specific to these regional banks, but it's going to be a bigger problem than they know it to be now. I mean, they'll probably figure it out and try to paper it over, but I mean, this is a huge hidden landmine on these regional bank balance sheets.
So, Dave, in conclusion,
Yeah.
as we just, everybody knows how I feel about this. I thought they'd be just be the general economy that would drive this, but here's the Fed just haphazardly just going along. And look at the problem that, this is only, I mean, to me, it's only going to get worse. I would, it sounds like you kind of think the same. So, Dave,
Way
is,
much worse, yeah.
okay, so are they done? Where the Fed, that is, can we, do you think now is the time, or do you wait for another pullback? Do you like, well, I'm gonna wait and for the Fed to finally announce their first cut? What are, how are you preparing for all this?
We were talking about the precious metals.
Yeah, and the mining shares. Where are we?
Well, it's funny that you should mention that because I was part of, the renewed Fed QE, which is in a different form than what we saw in 2008 and 2020, And part of that is this BTFP program that they put in. I actually was writing, I wrote the, and then I, with respect to the precious metal sector, I mean, it, first of all, they've already started printing money, right? I mean, the Fed's balance sheet popped $300 billion last week.
So it's just taking in those treasuries, Dave. That's all that is. It's
well, it's not though. That's not money that went that was provided by the Fed SOMA account. It was these other asset accounts where they basically took in those structured products from these regional banks and gave them liquidity against that, right? So it's essentially like a QE extended repo, but it's not accounted for in the SOMA account. It's in these other asset accounts, and you can see it if you go to the Federal Reserve website and look at their latest balance sheet. You can see which balance sheet account, which asset accounts went up quite a bit as of last Wednesday. So I think there's going to be a hell of a lot more money printing that comes, because if they don't print, you know, we're at that von Mises moment, right, where they can keep printing money and forestall doomsday, or they can, you know, and then the dollar collapses, or they can stop now and we'll have a banking system collapse. But I think the precious metals sector started sniffing this out last fall. So for instance, right, if you look at the charts of gold, silver, and the mining stocks, and I just use GDX as a proxy, and I know you look at these all the time. I mean, from the last day of October, gold's up 21% through today. And that doesn't include the last 2 hours when it's been, right, it's even moved higher. And silver is up 20% over the same period, and GDX is up nearly 30% over that same period. And that's versus the stock market, which the Dow is down a little bit, the S&P's up a little bit, and the NASDAQ's up 8%. And again, that's from the last day of October through this morning. So yeah, I think the precious metals, I think they're just getting their engines revved up. I mean, again, it's not identical to 2008, but it feels very similar to 2008, because if you remember back then, the sector went through a brutal sell-off between March and September.
Yeah.
And actually the end of September. And then in October, gold and silver started moving higher, and the mining stock started moving higher early November. And that was, you know, the gold and silver started moving before they announced formal QE programs. So I think we're seeing the same thing today. And I think potentially the scale of the move, and I don't, who knows what time frame this will occur over. I think the scale of the move may be bigger than what occurred between late 2008 and mid 2011.
And I wonder too, Dave, if the market, if you will, has been fooled a couple of times now, maybe three or four times by the Fed in the last 15 years. Oh, you know, we're going to normalize rates and the balance sheet's going back to a trillion. I mean, come on now. I mean, maybe everybody bought it again this last time, beginning a couple of years ago. But one of these times, it's going to be like, hey, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me five times, I'm an idiot. You know?
It's like the Lucy Charlie Brown football stunt, right?
Right. I mean, how many times are you going to fall for this nonsense of normalization, whatever that means? Dave, thank you. I'm out of time, everybody. I've got to go and get some stuff done. But Dave, you're such a good friend. I know I don't have to ask you this, but can we do this again soon?
Yeah, whenever you want. I mean, you know me. I work from home, and all I do is research stuff for my newsletters. So play a little bit of tennis. So anytime.
A little tennis. And again, please, I get, you've heard me, everybody's heard me say this ad nauseum since the first of the year. These are fascinating times, but you cannot just simply swallow, you know, what your stockbroker tells you or what you hear from your neighbor or what you see on CNBC or Bloomberg. You need as much independent and objective information as you can. And I cannot recommend more strongly what Dave does. Investment research dynamics at .com, right?
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. I just use the stock tips that I get from the guy who bags groceries at the local King Supers.
Right. And your Uber driver every once in a while. All right, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. This was tremendous. And I know everybody's thinking, wow, that was really a good podcast. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Craig.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back to wrap up the whole week tomorrow and see where we go from here.